Welcome to Lawyer v. Lawyer, the only legal podcast giving you both sides of the trial room floor. Attorney Gary Berger represents injured people and their families, while Attorney Debbie Champion helps people and companies protect themselves against injury claims. Together, they have over 50 years of trial experience. This is Lawyer v. Lawyer.
Hi, this is Debbie Champion. Welcome to Lawyer v. Lawyer. I'm here with Gary Berger today and our special guest, Kim Kern, expert mediator at USA&M. And we've been talking about mediation in our last podcast, and we wanted to get into the question of what are tactics and strategies are successful. Gary, you mentioned last time you have started sharing the mediation letter, the proposal that goes to the mediator, the summary of what the arguments are, to the other side, which surprised me. And I wanted to start with that today and have you talk about that tactic to get the mediation started.
Well, thank you.
Why do you do it?
And welcome, and thanks for coming again, Kim.
Yeah, happy to be here.
And so I asked the mediator, you know, and I always forget which mediators like a confidential letter, which one is there sharing. I asked the mediator. I used to never share. Now, the more and more I have the mediator saying, share it to the other side. Why you hide that? But of course, you write it differently, because I'm not going to share what my weaknesses are in a case or what I'm concerned about if I'm sharing it. And it also is a function of, am I doing an opening session or not? If I'm not doing an opening session, I put all my best stuff and I calculate my damages and how I'm going to whoop them at trial in my mediation letter, and I give it to the other side. And I want the person, because the way that insurance companies get authority is they run it up flagpoles and have committees and doing all their vetting beforehand. So yeah, I want them to have
that
before the mediation date, so that they're not getting more authority that day, and I'm working them up to what I see as the value of the case. You got to show your cards at some time. The longer I do this, the older I get. I'm kind of like, listen, let's just get to the point. Here's my good parts of the case. You're right. Here's my weak parts. Let's get to the number. Let's not dilly-dally, because as much as a big of ego as I have, or as much as I think I'm important, sometimes it doesn't matter. I mean, there's only so much you can do, right?
Right.
It is what it is, right? How about you? What do you do?
I don't share it.
Ever?
Ever.
Why is that?
I'm trying to think
Tell
about
Tell me, what do you do?
I'm trying to think about why. I think it's this. I think it's
because... You're stuck in your ways?
No, I think it's a good idea that you share it, because you're exactly...
you want to know.
No, not necessarily that. I want the client to see it from your words, and you're right. They have authority beforehand. They've got to get the authority beforehand, and they're not going to get, generally, not going to get much more while they're there. A plaintiff, on the other hand, makes their decision at the mediation, and when they are looking at my argument, in my mind, it puts the plaintiff in a position of having to defend themselves. And I don't want to go in with the plaintiff having to fight back. I don't want that.
Isn't it true you think you have you're doing it because of a tactical advantage, not giving the letter before?
Sometimes. It depends on the case. Let's say it's a clear issue, wrong. Let's say it's an auto case, rear end. Why am I talking about the plaintiff's damages to the plaintiff in a letter that I'm sending to the mediator? Because the plaintiff's going to see it and get mad at me for questioning their damages. So it's not necessarily tactical in that situation. It's really, I don't want the plaintiff to start out with their backup. On the other hand, if I have some stuff I don't want to share, then I don't want the copy to go to the other side, because there's a tactical advantage because of it. I also don't want them to know what my general theory is going to be. But I don't see a benefit for the actual plaintiff to know my position, and the plaintiff's attorney usually does anyway.
Well, in true mediator fashion,
yeah.
May I suggest?
What do you think,
compromise?
Kim? Compromise. Thank you, Kim. What do you think?
All right. So, on behalf of the mediator, we are seeing mediation statements being exchanged by the parties prior to the mediation more and more. And I tend to agree with Gary on this. I think the sooner
I won,
the sooner you can put your cards on the table, the faster we can get to a settlement, and the better the settlement, because we're not playing like a cloak and dagger game. I don't want them to know this. if you want to use this in your favor, you need to let the other side know about it. So I think exchanging mediation statements is good. But what I do is I call each party before the mediation and say, okay, what can you not put in writing in a mediation statement? And let's face it, that's not just what I don't want to say to the other side. Sometimes it's also what I don't want to put in writing for my client to see. I mean, let's say you have a difficult client. I know you two have never experienced a difficult client, but I have had experience with difficult clients. So maybe you don't want to put that in a written statement, and I understand why you wouldn't. So I call the parties and say, you know, hey, I've read your statement. Thank you. It's really helpful. What do you want to tell me? What do I need to know that you haven't put in the statement?
I find that really helpful. Because I need that. I need a mediator for a reason. I'll need you to say, listen, I want you to disabuse them of this, or I want you to, my client, I can't get through to my client this. And I want to talk about that in a minute, because there's things that the mediator can say that I can't say to my client but let me, before I get to there, my reason for doing the mediation statement early or giving it to the other side, that's all tactics on my side too. Let's be clear. I mean, yours may be tactical, but mine is certainly tactical on my side. But the other thing I like, so people who are regular listeners to the podcast, when you said you don't want them to know my theory, remember what Debbie does in her depositions and stuff. I've learned that I don't want to get, but you've said this
true.
Before.
No,
is
no,
that
talk about that. That's a good point.
She'll take depositions, but she won't ask the killer questions. She'll set it up and she'll save it for cross at trial, which I think is brilliant. And a lot of lawyers don't do that. So, like if you have the guy has a criminal record, or you have a witness statement where it gets rid of it, or you know the product has never had another injury in a million uses, you keep that stuff.
Right.
You don't play that. So you don't want the other side to ever know that.
But, right.
How do you decide tactically whether to reveal the killer stuff that you got in a mediation?
If I want to settle the case, I will reveal it.
If I need
to settle the case, I will reveal it. And if I need to settle a case, I will go so far as to look at the mediator and say, I need to settle this case.
Yes,
it could be a number of different reasons. My client might not want to try the case. I might have a terrible insured. I just may think the plaintiff deserves more money than my client believes the plaintiff deserves, and they're going to get more money, so it's going to look like a loss for me. So I want to get rid of that case and get it settled. Mm-hmm.
Debbie, I think it's important for both lawyers to realize that there are things going on underneath the surface that you are never going to know. And I say that because I've spent so much time in-house. I spent 16 years in-house, as well as many other years in a law firm. But when you're in-house as the lawyer, there are things going on beneath the surface that maybe aren't directly related to the lawsuit, but have everything to do with why we need to settle this case.
Right, right.
Well, that happens on the plaintiff's side too. I mean, I'll be saying, we're going to try it. My clients are like, I'm never trying this case.
Right.
And I don't want the other side to know that because they're not going to offer the money. I'm never going to tell
you
that.
Exactly right.
But I also have clients who are like, I'm not settling, and I want my day in court. So,
yes, and they want a front page story in the Post-Dispatch about their case and their win. I find that to be really interesting, is sometimes parties, the confidentiality is tough for them to swallow because they want to tell their story. They want everybody to know.
Well, there's a difference in tactic-wise. I never agree to gag orders on confidentiality from the plaintiff's side. I'll say you can't talk about the settlement agreement amount, but my client gets to go forward and say what the defendant did wrong, and if you want to buy a gag order, you got to pay a lot more than this measly sum. If you really want to silence this deal, you got to do it. But sometimes if they do, I'll agree to that. So the confidentiality and the scope of confidentiality is a whole nother negotiation.
Right.
So you need to get that out front. So you don't want to settle the case, because if you're a plaintiff and you settle the case, you get a number, you're at a tactical disadvantage, because because the defendant can insist on broader confidentiality or non-disparagement, even if you never talked about non-disparagement. And then you're like, well, I'm not going to agree to that. And they're like, but your client's going to end up doing it. So you need to get all that out and that nuance done. So and a lot of plaintiff's lawyers don't do it, because I'll come and they'll say confidentiality. And I'll say, well, what is the confidentiality? And a lot of times they're like, oh, we got to talk about that now. I say, yes, we do, because mm-hmm. I'll agree.
Well, heck yeah.
Because you need to know. And so you need to know that. Can I add one other tactic I do if I want to settle the case? So here's another, and this is all pre-mediation. And then I want to know, Debbie, I want you to maybe shoot us some great, in the heat of the moment, good tactics you have is... Sometimes I not only do a mediation statement, but I have done things like PowerPoint presentations, and here's depo clips, and here's how I'm going to whoop you at trial if it's a case that I want to settle. So, and what I do is I prepare, I've done it a number of cases where I prepare that ahead of time. I give it to them like 3 weeks before, so that all the adjusters, because what the defense lawyers sometimes tell the adjusters what the depots look like is different than what think they look
that
like.
That is true.
And so I've done things, and I do different, so I'll take, and we talked about in our trial strategy podcast before about, I'll take different parts of different depots, and they won't realize how I really got them until I put it together, and they're like, oh man, you really nailed us. So I'll say, so I'll take the different depo clips from different witnesses. This is why you have a duty. This is why you did investigate. This is why you said you didn't do this because of cost. I literally tried a case, and that's what they said. So you can put these together. I had a big products case, a debt collapse case. It's on one of the walls here somewhere where I put a timeline together of all the debt complaints, and I literally bought a program for it. Yeah. And I had these broad things, and I put them on poster boards in a mediation where they could see it. There's another lawyer that I know that did where they said it was a Med-Mal case, and I've heard this story where they. And the question is, we decide, do you want to settle this case in mediation or do you not want to settle this case in mediation? Because you approach the mediation totally differently from a tactic point of view. And another lawyer put, and I'll turn, I know I'm speaking
long.
Take
your time. No, it's good.
But it was a Med-Mal case, and the question was whether there was prior complaints or indicia of this problem that the doctor should have tipped to. So literally, they took 20 medical records. They put them on 3x4 foam boards. They bought 20 easels. And they put red dots by every complaint that they should have done, and they circled the room up with it, and they brought them in, and they said, you're saying that, look at this. This is what trial is going to look like, so you better settle this case. I have a bunch of easels where I brought in boards to try to say, because if I want to settle this case, if I want to get the most money in my client's pocket now, then I want that. I want them to see what it's going to look like,
absolutely.
And I need to persuade that. I can't just do it that day. I got to give it. So I will take my PowerPoint and I will give it to the other side, and they're like, "What are you sending me this for?" And I'm like, "Well, you need to see this, because I'm not going to play. You want to make what defense adjuster wants to have to come and listen to some jerky plaintiff's lawyer? They hate it. Why do they want to? And why do they want me to make them play and listen to it while I stare at them?
Right.
They don't want to do that. Let them see it before. Let them digest it. Let them run it up the flagpole, and then let them make their decision. Because when they come there, I want them to have that authority.
It's a brilliant idea.
Thank you.
Defense attorneys never really want to do much in openings because they're afraid they're going to alienate the other side. But plaintiff's attorneys sometimes need to, and that is the perfect way to do it without doing an opening, because insurance adjusters generally hate the opening because they're either not learning anything new, and what we're doing is teaching the plaintiff they should get entrenched in their own press, or they did learn something new and it's too late for them.
Or no one likes to be scolded and talked down to.
Yeah.
And what you're doing in an opening statement is you're talking down to the adjuster. And they're sitting there going, screw
yeah.
you. I've sat through a million trials. You think you're the deal, but you know what? We got defensive. No one likes to be put in that position. I don't like to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to get. It reminds me of getting in trouble for my mom.
That's
right?
A great
no
idea.
One likes that.
Gary, one thing I would say about that is and I don't mean to plug USA&M, but I'm going to, because we have such fabulous facilities, different size rooms, big, small, with windows, without windows, where you can actually make that kind of presentation in person if you need to. And, you know, we're going to go to such and such lawyer's office. What are their maybe their conference rooms have a table for four people. How are you going to bring in 13 poster boards and put them around a conference room like that? You're not. So I love the fact that we have just a variety of rooms and resources so that you have some flexibility to do that. And I've had openings where plaintiff's attorneys do PowerPoint presentations or do very in-depth presentations, really on both sides, and they can be very effective.
So you think, are you of the mind, do it at the mediation and make them listen to it, or have you of the mind, send it to them before because no one likes a dog and pony show in their face?
It's critical you send it to them before. It's critical because that adjuster has to have time to look at it and then hopefully make a decision. Oh, this case is worth more than I thought it was. I'm going to have to up my reserve. So beforehand is critical. But I don't know. I think at times at the mediation, it can be helpful. I think in part because there are people at the mediation, you know, for example, when you have an individual defendant as well as a corporate defendant, sometimes the information that those parties are getting is different. And maybe, you know, sophistication level is very different. So that for them to hear it at the mediation sometimes can be helpful.
That reminds me, I was going to say one of the best ways you can do it at the mediation, I think, is when you need to teach them about who the person was that died, or who they were before the accident versus who they are now, as opposed to here's what you did wrong, but here's who this person is. And I remember being in a death case, and I had a client who had, I mean, really no liability, but this woman died in this car accident case. And I think she might have been a saint. I really do. At least after this presentation, I thought she was a saint. This woman, I had met her children. We had taken their depositions, and I won't go into detail about it, but I am telling you, this woman had every adversity you could have in the world, particularly with her children, and the worst things in the world had happened to her children, and she had pulled them up by their bootstraps and made them stand tall and got them through life in a situation where most people would have given up. So they did this presentation. What happened to me? Well, you can imagine. I start crying. It was one of the most humiliating things. I start crying, and I'm thinking, oh, and now I have to tell these people, but I'm not paying you anything. And that's exactly what I did. I told them, I'm so sorry for your loss. She's insane. This woman is wonderful. I'm sorry I can't pay you anything because we didn't cause the accident.
But you know what? Your reaction told the plaintiff.
They did. I love those people.
I have been heard. My story is dramatic. My story does have value. And maybe you didn't make any money, but sometimes money isn't. I mean, a lot of times the case is about money, but it's not always all about money.
Well, they did make money because there was a co-defendant. And so Judge Calvin took me outside and said, you know your co-defendant is going to kill you because... It actually turned out fine in the long run. They did fine.
I tried and lost a case 2 weeks ago with multiple deaths, and the defense lawyer, brilliant, honorable, hardworking lawyer, Tad Eckenrode. You know Tad?
Yeah, sure.
Great, honorable lawyer. He was brilliant because he got up and he said, in opening and closing, this is about the nicest, best family you're ever going to hear about, and they're great people, and it's a tragedy that what happened. But let me tell you why we're not liable.
Yeah.
And you're a human, and you, regardless of, you know, you got, and it's a smart defense tactic to separate out causation from damages.
Yeah.
And that's where you win these, you know, I say half of med mal cases are won on, more than half are won on causation rather than breach of standard care in the first place. So, or whether it's car, whatever it is.
Right.
So if causation is the issue, you acknowledge the damage, you're not fighting that, and then you take the wind out of their sails from a defense point of view. So that can be effective. What are some other tactics that you find effective?
Before you move on, one tactic that I have seen very effective on both sides is something that Gary alluded to, which is not just to come to the mediation and say, Well, in the deposition of the driver, he said this. Rather, you actually have the DEP transcript, or at least, you know, the page you want, and you say, look, here's the question, here's the answer, and you have the page with you, or you have it on your computer or whatever, and I take that with me into the other room and say, you know, the driver said this. So I'm not using someone's summary or someone's characterization of the testimony, but I'm actually referring to the testimony itself. And that's true with documents. That's true with text messages or screenshots. Don't rely on a summary. Bring those key pieces. Bring them to the mediation and let your mediator do the dirty work of going into the other room and saying, well, what about this?
If that's brilliant, I will tell you why I think that's good. There are attorneys in town, there are firms in town who will do this. They'll come with their quotes from depots. And they'll take a question, I think I've told Gary this before, they'll take a question that's a really good question, and they'll give an answer that was to a different question. And so...
Oh, that's terrible!
So I've had it happen over and over and over again. And I will tell you, what happens is the negotiation's over. Because now we can't believe a word they're going to say. And my adjuster will be like, look at you and go, did that happen? Then you go get the deposition, you say, here was the question, this was their answer. It's a totally different answer. And so they're done.
Oh.
They're done.
Oh.
It's terrible. And it still happens.
Because they lose all credibility.
Yeah. They lose all credibility. And the adjuster is like, well, now I can't believe anything they're telling
you. Yeah, right.
About what the don't do, you know, you do, as a lawyer, doesn't matter on what side of the V, this is lawyer v. lawyer, doesn't matter on what side of the V you're on, you do that, you lose your credibility with the other side and with the jury, and then they're like, well.
And it hurts your client. Either way, it really hurts your client. And as a defense attorney, you got to remember who your client really is. That's that defendant having to go there and listen to you tell something that isn't true to the jury. Mm-hmm. That's awful.
Great points. Both. So what I like about your point, Kim, is that, you know, as lawyers, Debbie and I, we like our demonstrative evidence. We like the depo. We like the picture. We like these other things. But what you're saying is bring it for the mediator, because the mediator wants to have that too. The mediator wants to have that exhibit, have that document as a tool in their arsenal to try to get to yes, to try to get to a settlement.
Yes, because then when I take that demonstrative evidence or that documentary evidence into the other room, they have a much more difficult time refuting it than if I just bring in a summary of what the statement was.
What are some other effective tactics you've seen?
Another tactic that I have seen, and this is, I have found this to be a little more effective on the plaintiff's side, I guess, is that if a plaintiff's lawyer marches into the mediation and says, we have a trial date, we're ready to go, we're going to have these six witnesses, and they really, really, they have tried cases, and they don't mind trying cases, win or lose, they're happy to go to trial, and they make that very clear to the defendant that they're not a plaintiff's lawyer that settles everything. They're ready to, they haven't asked for a continuance. I guess that's maybe the biggest thing is they haven't tried to continue the trial on and on and on, but they're ready to march in and get this done. I think defendants find that very persuasive and pay more money because of it.
That's right. The first line of my mediation letter is, thanks for mediating this. And I say, this case is set on this day, in this venue, here's the judge. Because that's often the first question that a mediator asks. When's this case set? And then I'd say the negotiation history, and then I get in the facts.
Yeah, if you have a trial date, I really urge plaintiff's lawyers, if you have a trial date, protect that trial date with all the muscle you have.
I do that all the time. I fight that all the time.
I learned early on, same with defense. I can count literally in 30 years, one hand, how many cases I've ever asked for continuance on.
That's great.
I do not ask for continuances. I do not do it. Now, if somebody's dead, or if somebody, you know, that may be it. Or if it was set without my input and I had a vacation, I would ask for continuance. But that's it.
Well,
my father died. I didn't ask for continuance the next week.
Oh,
I got a continuance because the judge called and said, you're not trying this case. But I didn't ask for one.
Well, that tactic, that you say on the plaintiff's lawyers, Kim, is equally effective on the defense side too, because people know Debbie tries cases and gets great results, and you have that reputation. And there are other defense lawyers who have that reputation. And on the plaintiff's side, we're like, listen, we can sit there and saber rattle as much as we want, but we know when we go to trial, they know what they're doing. They're going to be smart. They're gonna bring this verdict down, and they're not gonna have the jury hate them, you know.
So if you're a younger lawyer and maybe you don't have 20 trials under your belt, what can you do? Which is, I think, to say, look, I'm a young lawyer.
Roll
I'm
the
anxious
dice.
To try cases.
That's right.
I want to get into the courtroom and try
Good
cases.
Point.
I would love to try this. So not having that resume, you know, of trials doesn't have to stop you from this. You just have to change your tactic a little bit.
That's brilliant. And you say they have nothing to lose. They're going to go in and try it. And the other thing, you, as a young lawyer who hasn't tried a lot of cases, sometimes being in front of the jury, misstepping, asking awkward questions, the jury loves it because you're a real person. And, you know, it's not, I'm going to say you're not the Columbo of trialers, but, you know, being a little, I know defense lawyers who I know, I'm like, they're smarter than that. They do it on purpose. You know, they go, well, gosh, you know, they make it simple. And you're nodding. Do you do that?
I'm laughing because I'm thinking about Denny Burns.
Denny was so talented. He did the 20-minute plaintiff's depot.
He did.
He took a plaintiff's depot for 20 minutes. He got everything he needed, and that's all he needed. And he crushed them.
He would come into court, and he would just kind of smile at the jury and just talk real, and he will win that case every time.
I know. Listen, so let's do this. So I have a bunch more tactics to do. Kim, can you stay on for another episode?
Sure.
All right, so let's do our next episode. Let's round out the rest of our Debbie and I are going to really reveal. We're gonna give us our best tactics and really do the reveal. And then Kim's going to tell us whether or not it's going to work or not. So thanks a lot for listening to Lawyer v. Lawyer. See you next time for more mediation tactics.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lawyer v. Lawyer. To get more information, suggest topics for Debbie and Gary to discuss, or hire them, email info@lawyervlawyer.com. For more episodes, visit our Lawyer v. Lawyer Facebook page or website. Although the advice is good, no attorney-client relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. Thanks for listening.